Welcome to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci here on this fine Monday drop, homeroom. Let's start the week off fresh. Jacob, how are you doing, man?
This is the Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Chairman of the board, Jacob.
It's both of us today, Johnny. We're rocking it here on a homeroom. I'm excited for this one. It's been a long week. Finally getting back in the saddle. We can talk some education and some educated educators who talk it. I'm excited, Johnny.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're in the middle of November, just a little past that. It's, for teachers, it's a pretty exciting time because from the beginning of the school year, and for most educators out there, I mean, we're still on that like old schedule of like, you know, taking summers off, not like off, but not having students in the summer. And then, you know, we're on that really, you know, agrarian calendar that still carries over from back in the day when, you know, kids were needed for helping out on the harvest and the farming, and they couldn't go back to school until that was done. But, you know, today we still kind of practice some of those remnants of the old world. And kids started school generally in August, some in the beginning of September. And things are pretty busy, Jacob. September and October are packed with a ton of curriculum, a lot of teaching. And it's usually, you know, one of the first benchmarks of a school year is that Thanksgiving break. It's the first kind of big break that comes up before, you know, the holiday break over December. And then there's usually a midwinter or winter break and a spring break. You know, most of the school year is chopped up with some benchmarks that give teachers a breather. They need to come up for air. So educated educators out there, you know, listening, you're almost there. You're almost at Thanksgiving. And that's a big marker for those of us in the marathon that is a school year. So we're coming up on that, Jacob. Exciting times. But, you know, it's another week. It's a new day, Monday here. And a lot's been happening in education. So I thought we'd chop some things up, Jacob, today. And then one thing stood out to me this weekend when I was kind of reading, you know, what's happening in the world of education. There was a report that had come out a couple weeks ago, but it's gaining some traction, about teenagers in the U.S. And so we'll get to that. But lots of things happening. Last week, Jacob, was American Education Week. Can you believe it? The 11th through the 18th was Education Week. And the theme was Together for Safe, Just, and Equitable Schools. And this is something named by the National Education Association, the NEA. It's a big one. You know, it's like a big union that we all are part of. You know, teachers, we do this together communally, collaboratively.
Sure.
So the NEA marked last week as American Education Week in order to, you know, acknowledge and celebrate professionals like teachers out there, the leaders, the paraeducators, the bus drivers, the librarians, the custodial staff that helps keep our classrooms and schools clean, the crossing guards that often volunteer their time to make sure kids are safe out of school, the recess, you know, monitors, the lunch staff, everybody in schools. American Education Week, we're coming off that. Hey, we thank you for everything you do to make things possible. You know, firm believers here at Busted Pencils that every kid, right, doesn't just deserve, but should have, right, a quality education. Now, unfortunately, we talk about all the time that that's not necessarily the case for every kid and gives us all plenty of hard work to do all the time. But in the meantime, let's celebrate all those folks putting in that hard work, right? Public education at its best is something very special. And when something's special, it's worth working hard for. So even though Celebration Week was last week, it's never the wrong time to thank somebody contributing to public education for their important service. So American Education Week last week, Jacob.
Johnny, if I could say, I know it was last week was Public Education Week, but maybe it's controversial to say this, Johnny, but to me, I think all year we should be thankful to our public educators.
Bro, that's why I was thinking about it and bringing it up. I was like, oh, no doubt. Okay, cool. A great opportunity on Busted Pencils to just say a collective thank you out there to everyone. And if you're a listener, to make it a goal this week to just go a little bit out of your way to say thank you to one of those folks who are working to make public education better. And that's, you know, that's for all the way from principals, teachers, you know, school board members, to everybody involved. It's just big time. I mean, last week we talked about coaches. They're another big one. Yep. Don't get me started, Jacob, or this will turn into a whole show about the teacher coach connection. All right. We talked about that this week and weekend, but we'll probably come back to it soon enough. But Jacob, let's get right into some of the fun, man. This article in EdWeek really stood out to me. Education Week. There's two big news sources with very similar names out there. So this one's Education Week, and it talks about teens in our country. 84% of teens, Jacob, distrust the news.
Wow.
Right? And experts are saying this could have disastrous, no coincidence. Anytime we're talking about teens, usually the experts are saying disaster or something to fear. But this could have disaster consequences for school, for education, for our future democracy. I do kind of agree with this, but let's dive into this. This is a fact, Jacob. 84% of teens report that they distrust the news. What do you think about that?
Well, let's set the table, as they say in our business, Johnny. And I'm looking at a Gallup poll over here, and it says that 72% of adults trust the news. So
trust it.
Yeah. Distrust the news. Sorry.
So, distrust. Yeah, okay.
72%. This is distrust.
whopping majority of teens and I'd also say a whopping majority of adults.
Yes.
Distrust of the news. This is a little scary to me, Jacob. I can talk about why, but I'm curious. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking we need to keep in mind that it's not just our teenagers. Though, if you look at that trend, teenagers are 12% more likely to distrust the news than even their Fox News watching parents are, which is probably concerning. I mean, you would like to see that trend heading the opposite direction. Instead, we see our young people are even more worried about being able to trust what they see in the media. I think that it comes from a point of, you know, maybe a little bit of online awareness and online literacy. I mean, if you're a teenager, you're more used to being on the internet and you see crazy stuff there all the time. And maybe a healthy skepticism is a good thing. But at what point do you go from healthy skepticism to not being able to believe anything? And I think this is an opportunity for our wonderful educators out there like yourself, Dr. Johnny, and like us here on Busted Pencils to help educate and inform our young people as to what is a good source. How do you evaluate the legitimacy of information you're seeing? I think it's something that everybody's dealing with in this internet age, and I'm not surprised to see that young people are dealing with it in the worst way.
Yeah, Jacob, I mean, we're similarly aligned on this. And I love what you talked about in terms of when we bring it back around to education, the importance we have as teachers to acknowledge this moment, this era that we're in, and to teach, you know, media literacy, to talk about where does our information come from, right? Cue up Beastie Boys. Where you get your information from, boy? Where'd you get your information from, boy? You think that you can follow where revelation comes? Right, so the idea here, though, really seriously, coming back to it, is like, how are we building trust among one another and trust in where we get our information from when distrust is predominantly what we're expressing, we're experiencing in large groups here, right? Whether it's teenagers or adults, if we, you know, gather all those surveys together, you know, what we learn is that there is a negative take on media right now. That's like a polite way of me saying we don't trust the media, right? But one thing that teachers can be really active in is in teaching media literacy. You know, really teaching what are our sources? How do we fact check things? What is the best way to navigate a vast sea of information and separate it out? Okay, what's fact? What's misinformation? And what's disinformation? These are kind of three categories, I think, off the top of my head. When I'm working with social studies teachers, we talk about, you know, including multiple perspectives and gathering primary and secondary sources, evaluating those sources. And we do a whole unit on, you know, navigating facts from misinformation, from disinformation. So for listeners, let's just clarify, what's the difference between misinformation and disinformation? Well, here's my simple, hard, fast rule. Misinformation is just a source got it wrong. And that's kind of a polite way of maybe we got information too soon and released it, right? We were incorrect, or new information came out that you know, replaces the misinformation that we shared, right? And we have an ethical responsibility to owning up to misinformation. I often use the example in class, like, hey, I'm solving a math problem on the board. I'm adding two fractions and I make a mistake, right? I don't dig in and stand by it like, hey, nope, this is the correct answer. It absolutely is the correct answer because it simply is not. I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Right. And I own the mistake and correct it. And I, you know, we talked about this a lot last week about, you know, risk-taking and modeling that it's okay to fail. It's not really a failure if we're learning together. So misinformation is simply just getting it wrong. And we have the ethical responsibility to correcting that. You see that often. Updating news, you know, what we had earlier reported was incorrect. And now we are, you know, more informed and we'd like to, you know, with some humility here, say we got it wrong. And here's the most current and fact-based information. Let's go. So that's misinformation. And there's always been a fair amount of that. Disinformation now, Jacob, right, is false information shared with the knowledge of it being false, but with some kind of intent, right? Yeah. And this is what experts, and I say experts kind of loosely, but, you know, the folks who ran the survey with these teens, 13-year-old to 18-year-olds, last spring by the News Literacy Project, a wonderful nonprofit organization, the News Literacy Project, right? But they said, you know, there is a distrust among teenagers in the news. In fact, 84% have a pretty dismal view of news media. Well, when we come back around to this, one of the things the experts say this is important for us to pay attention to is because it threatens the viability, one, of a free press or of a press, because, you know, free press might even be something of a historical relic at this point. But, you know, historically, and even I'd argue contemporarily, like the news media is an important watchdog and guardian of democracy, like having conversations, right, with one another that are based on information we get and trust is a really important way that we as democratic citizens stay informed and talk about the important issues in our communities, right? But what this also does, Jacob, this massive sea of information we're in, whether it's AI or just internet in general, right? I'm the guy who always picks on AI, so I don't want to just point the finger and say it's AI's fault, but it certainly is part of the vast sea of information we're navigating. And within that, misinformation and I would say predominantly disinformation, right, has led to, now we're seeing both adults and teenagers who are about to become adults. So generations of citizens who are highly vulnerable to the manipulation and influence of political propagandists, of trolls, of conspiracy theories, of extremists, ideological extremists. So when we start to open that floodgate, right, that disinformation is allowed or is the standard or is the norm, right, we really make ourselves vulnerable to the manipulation that information can influence. And Jacob, I think we've all experienced this in mass over at least the last decade, certainly through, you know, most recently I can think of, you know, elections, as well as, you know, the COVID era, right? Remember all the misinformation and disinformation and the conversations around sorting that out. So not shocked by this. Jacob, love that you did some digging here and see that adults are 72%, you know, dismal view of the news media, and young people, I'll call them young people, 13 to 18, you know, also have a pretty dismal view. 84%, you know, have a distrust of the news.
I think so, it's notable, Johnny, to see that it's even higher than the adults, who I think a lot of us, when we're coming into the internet age, we felt like, sure, you know, our parents and our grandparents, they don't trust the internet and all this media stuff. But young people, they're totally going to understand it and be able to navigate it. But it turns out to be the opposite. It's even harder for young people to navigate the media ecosystem and know what to believe and what to disbelieve. And I think part of that initial promise of the internet, we thought, oh, this is going to democratize information. It'll be easy for everybody to get information. And it turns out that some of that information is true and some of it is false and some of it's misinformation and disinformation. So there's just there's a lot of stuff coming at young people all the time. I can understand why they're getting confused.
I agree, man. And every tool can be a weapon, right? And
absolutely.
So, like we talk about, I do really believe the internet and like an open free media kind of flow of information is absolutely key to democracy. I think that's, yeah, you know, that's very important. So a little bit of me is, you know, is saying I'm also, you know, while disappointed in the outcomes of these surveys, you know, I'm not happy about a distrust of news. I'm also, you know, excited about the fact that young people are aware of it.
Yeah.
Right. So it does, like I come back around to, you know, it does set the table, as we talked about before the show. It, you know, sets the table for teachers to be, you know, teaching this, to say, hey, look, where do we get our information from? How do we know that it's fact? How do we, you know, navigate misinformation? How do we, you know, limit how much disinformation we take in? And then on the flip side of that, let's point the finger somewhere, right? Let's point the finger at news media and say, hey, man, come on. You play an important role in our democracy. What is your responsibility to fact and to, if you do share misinformation, correcting it, right? If we don't have trust from our reporters, then what do we have in a democracy? So it's, you know, I think it's a growth moment for our country and for our world as we're navigating these tools that we're seeing can also be used as a weapon, as a form of, you know, creating vulnerability. So the pessimist side of me, which is pretty rare, Jacob, but I just kind of speak truth to power here.
Okay.
Some of this I do believe is by design.
All right.
Right. So if you make things really messy and most people distrust it, and then the norm becomes to distrust,
yeah,
right, you're eroding one of the core important characteristics of a democracy.
Yeah.
You're actively working to erode trust, which is a really important aspect of democracy. So by design, Jacob, and maybe that puts me in the category of slightly conspiracy theorist. My students always like to say, okay, Johnny, take off the tinfoil cap, right? Well, and they're always checking me on that.
Some of that is uncontroversial. I mean, I think it's like the pretty well confirmed that at least, you know, talk about outside of our own country, coming from Russia or whatever, that there are efforts that are documented to come in and flood us with misinformation. And then I guess you get into more controversial stuff as well. Are my fellow Americans trying to do this too? But we know that things like this do happen. There are efforts by people to spread misinformation on purpose to lower the trust.
Yep. And I love this, Jacob, you know, as a teacher, especially when I'm sharing facts, right, that are also on topics that have a tremendous amount of misinformation and disinformation, I always start with the same phrase. I say, here we go. We're going to learn about this. And I'm going to share the information that I have that I believe pretty strongly with my expertise is located in the fact column, mm-hmm, of information. And I say, I'm not telling you how to think or what to think. I'm just giving you those facts, right? Together, we have the responsibility of figuring out how or what we think. And this is a big thing I think that our news media should be really focused on. Give us the information and give us information that is fact-based, right? The best available knowledge, okay? Because we can always say, well, how do we absolutely know something is fact? Well, we have a standard and a criteria. It's been, you know, something that journalists can speak to, reporters can speak to. There's sort of like an ethical oath that I think we take as reporters or as journalists or as anybody sharing information that is fact-based. Otherwise, it should be categorized as fiction, right? And so if we're not categorizing what we're sharing as fiction and we're purporting it as fact, we have the responsibility to back those facts up. And then I really like, especially in this moment we're in, to really clearly say, not telling you how or what to think, just sharing the information. Now, Jacob, I will say, I actually don't mind when people I look to for information also share how they think, right? Or maybe tell me what might be a good way to think. I don't mind that. But I think as a culture, especially in this vulnerable moment we're in, we're very sensitive to being told how or what to think. You know, it's a kind of a reactionary moment. And that's also the increased number. Like you gave me, 72% of adults, you know, have a dismal view of the news or distrust, and 84% of teens. Well, this is also reminding me, as a guy who spends a lot of time around teenagers as an educator, right? I know one thing about them. I know a few things about them, but one thing I could say is they have the best detection and radar system for authenticity, right? And if you're not authentic, then for worse, I would say that's part of being a teenager, but it's also part of like why young generation is so important. But for better or for worse, they have an either or. Adults, that's probably why that number is a little lower too for the adult population. You know, like I said, I don't necessarily mind being told how to think, because you know, I'm fairly developed in my own beliefs and thoughts. And, you know, I've had some years to experience some things and to see some, you know, swings in information. So I can take in information, hear somebody who's telling me how they think, and maybe even telling me how they think I should be thinking. And I can navigate that with some discernment. Teenagers, in my experience, Jacob, and I love this about them, are like, you're either real or you're fake. And if you're fake, GTFO, right? They're just like dismissed, shut down. And this is true even when we're just teaching. If I'm teaching math and I'm being real about it and I'm developing a relationship with my students and I'm being authentically me, right? They learn better, and not just from me, but from any teacher. So, right, like I tend to be a loud, boisterous, big energy teacher, right? Maybe the teacher next door to me is a quiet, structured, and very direct with their language. And, you know, they're just a different teaching style, but it's true to them. They're real. You ask students about their favorite teachers, and then you start to ask them about why they learn well in that classroom. One of the things they'll always tell you is, oh, Miss So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so, they're real. You say, what does that mean? I mean, they just, you know, they just are, they're, you know, they're ride or die. They're here for it. They love math. They like teaching us. They really care about us. They share all these things about this person that reminds me of their either or. You're either real or you're not. And if you're not, good luck. Good luck getting through to the youths. Yeah. Right. And I love this about them. So that reminds me of this too, you know, like how our news media can be more real. And I think part of that in this era, and we're all a little bit sensitive to this, just say, I'm not telling you how to think or what to think. I'm sharing information with you that I believe is important for you figuring out how you think and what you think. Right. So that's kind of my thing today, Jacob. I got a little off topic here or there in our homeroom, almost turned it into a class and session. Sorry, listener. It's supposed to be light and just preview the week. But you know what? We're into it. It's November. It's almost the Thanksgiving break. We're coming off of Education Celebration Week, Together for Safe, Just, and Equitable Schools by the NEA. You know, just a fun reminder, like Jacob said, it doesn't need to be a celebration week to thank somebody who's given their hard work to something really special, public education. And when you're supporting public education, you're practicing democracy in action. And now it's time for your moment of zen. If those in charge of our society, politicians, corporate executives, and owners of press and television can dominate our ideas, they will be secure in their power. Thanks for listening to Busted Pencil's Homeroom Podcast today. And remember to grab great podcasts filled with more Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website. And don't you miss this week's class in session on Wednesday, and you'll find our special drop of Producer's Choice on Friday. And of course, Pencil Busters, you can always catch the Busted Pencils broadcast on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.